we really are just focusing on how do we provide the best experience to our users. And all of that's really built around that. And
if only life were that simple, Greg, if only life were that simple.
The Business of Betting podcast is presented by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming industry. 4 out of the top 5 U.S. operators personalize player experiences with Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming industry. Learn more about Optimove by requesting a demo at optimove.com/businessofbetting. And if you like what you see, you will get your first month free.
What is up, everybody? I am Jason Trost, the host of the Business of Betting podcast. Episode 208, I am joined today with Greg Kajewski. He is the CEO and co-founder of Better Edge. Welcome to the podcast, Greg.
Thanks for having me, man. Right off of March Madness, the first opening weekend. It's a good weekend to be here and excited to join.
Well, the first round was a very good round for me, but as some of you will know, I went to Northwestern. I'm a huge, huge, huge Northwestern fan. I'm a big Northwestern fan for even people that went to Northwestern. And so I ended up staying up last night and watching the UConn game, and we just didn't bring it last night, and it was a tough watch.
How late was that game for you?
It started at, I think, midnight, like 12:30, and then ended around 2 a.m., something like that. So it was not good for my sleep hygiene, let's put it that way.
That's some dedication. I've always, you know, I lived over in London as well, and I always struggled to keep up with American sports and try to stay up so late to watch them. So kudos to you and being able to check that out.
I don't do it very rarely. I had to make a special pact with my wife to be able to stay up and not handle the kids in the morning. Which team are you following in March Madness?
Yeah, so I was in Northern Iowa, kind of grew up a huge Hawkeye fan and enjoyed the, you know, 2011 run that Ali Frokmanesh had and liked the Valley. This year's been a bit tough. I mean, I don't have any dogs in the fight, so my bracket's doing okay. I mean, obviously a lot of favorites won yesterday, but I think, you know, Houston or Iowa State, I'm kind of rooting for in Poland, which should be cool to see.
I went to the University of Northern Iowa, I want to say in 98 or 99. I was a big wrestling fan, and the national championships were in Cedar Falls. And so I visited your campus way back and had a great time there.
Wrestling in Iowa is a pretty exciting, you know, passionate endeavor. So
it's a religion.
Yeah, it's a cool campus. Yeah, it absolutely is.
Did you wrestle at all or by chance?
I actually wrestled for 3 days and realized it was not my forte. So I quickly left, and I was a big basketball player. So played basketball, football, ran track and baseball through high school. And I realized wrestling wasn't my forte, but I have a lot of respect for the sport. Obviously, you know, what's happened there and Dan Gable and the history is just really cool to follow.
I bet you very few people on the podcast know who Dan Gable is. For those of you that don't know, he's sort of like the Jesus of Iowa. He's one of the best wrestlers in the history of wrestling. Won the Olympics, won national championships, was undefeated in the Munich Olympics, I think, and was just such a legend. I actually went to his wrestling camp, and he's such a nice guy. The people went to the camp over to his house, and I thought, how cool is this, this legend of wrestling? He opened up his house, served popsicles, you know, was very chatty. I actually got to do a few wrestling moves with him when I went to the wrestling camp. It was just such a great experience.
That's impressive, man. I want to shake your hand off that as well. I mean, yeah, he's a legend in the space and super cool guy with the impact he's had on wrestling and Iowa sports and all of that. So
it was quite the summer camp. I think I went when I was 16 years old or something. And, you know, they'd have you wake up at 6 a.m., do sprints on the quad. And, you know, it's just sort of like pain. You know, wrestling is a sport of pain. I was talking from Chris from Simple Bet, who's a collegiate wrestler at Penn State, a few podcasts ago about this. And while it's wrestling is not fun at all as a sport, you know, the fun sports are like basketball, soccer, football. Those are fun sports to play, but wrestling is a painful sport. But I think it really set me up for a lot of life lessons of like toughness and grinding it out and being able to handle defeat. And you get embarrassed all the time. You know, when you lose, it's very public. You know, you can't hide behind a team like you kind of can in basketball, soccer, and football. So I think it's a great life sport, but not a very fun sport.
Yeah. How long did you wrestle for, though?
I wrestled like when I was like years and years, probably 8 years. And I walked on to Northwestern team, which is Big Ten wrestling. And you probably know Big Ten wrestling is no joke. And I thought I was pretty tough. And I am not tough. And I just got my ass absolutely kicked on the Northwestern team. And I was like, I can't be a student and do this. So I ended up not lasting on the team. I think I lasted a month at Northwestern wrestling. But I love wrestling. It's such a great sport. I think it's more of a better sport to play than to watch. You know, even having, I've gone to two or three national championships, which have fun moments, but it's a lot of sitting around in the gym. And so I don't know if it's a great spectator sport, which is part of the reason I think it got dropped out of the Olympics, sadly. But it's such a great sport to teach discipline and toughness.
Yeah, I recall having friends that just watching them cut weight and have the focus and the dedication and all of that. It's unmatched. I mean, there might be a reason why I only made it 3 days, but I won't, you know, go into that too much. It's a fun sport to watch. And obviously the national championships are absolutely nuts, kind of as you watch just the fans go crazy over all of it as well. So,
yeah. Yeah. And the Iowa fans are the best and they're fun to watch. Great. So let's pivot to Better Edge. Why don't you give an introduction to the audience, what it is and what you're trying to do?
Yeah. So 2019, you know, I had a buddy, I had met him at PwC and we were fast friends, and he came to me really focused around what he was doing with his buddies. And, you know, they were betting head to head. They were putting bets out there through iMessages and group chats and things like that. And he said, you know, look at the financial markets and what Robinhood did. You know, we use Venmo every single day. There's no fees. However, you're seeing this 5 to 10, 15% fee on sports bets. Why don't we create a platform that takes that fee out and we go monetize in more traditional or more recent ways that technology companies monetize instead of the traditional ways? And I took that idea and I started really just studying what was happening, the trends in 2019 around sports betting. And we went to a Sport Radar Innovation Challenge and we pitched it and said, hey, you know, let's build an exchange at the core and let's build all of these additional features on top of it, including social feeds and office pools and all of these kind of different ways for people to engage and play with their friends. And pitched that to Sport Radar and they came back and said, hey, that's a really cool idea. And we ended up winning the Innovation Challenge. And that night we were out celebrating. We're like, hey, that was a fun kind of 12-13 hour gauntlet and a pitch to, you know, a Shark Tank style panel, and said, should we do something like this or not? And, you know, back then, 2019, it was pretty, you know, green pastures and a lot of upsides of what was going to happen, and said, hey, let's give this a shot and get after it. So we launched 2021 and been in market since then, you know, have over about 20,000 users in the community and really just kind of a lot of good feedback around creating a better experience focus around our users and kind of our community. And that's led to a lot of B2B relationships and charitable endeavors and things like that as we continue to build and scale.
So if you could zoom into Better Edge, you said there's about 20,000 people in the community. What is it essentially? Are you a you mentioned some B2B angles. Are you an operator? Are you a software provider? Are you a community? What are you guys?
Yeah, and it's funny you ask because it's kind of hard to wrap your head around because I think we're taking a very specific approach on what's right for the user and what are they already doing. So if you just take, you know, the life cycle of a bettor, you may be out on Twitter or you may be in iMessages and understanding what are the influencers betting or what are my friends betting? And then you're, you know, that experience then jumps to a sports book, and that sports book is legacy type, that transaction only. And after you have that transaction, then you're obviously taking your data and saying, hey, how did I do? What's my win percent? Maybe you load that into a Juice Reel, Picket, Action Network to track your bets to decide, what's your ROI? How are you doing? You know, how are you doing against your friends, leaderboards, all that type of stuff, the gamification element. All of that is essentially a compass within Better Edge. So you don't have to have this kind of siloed approach of having these different platforms, different areas. And that allows for us to build a lot of cool things on top of it. So everything that you see in the social feed is obviously specifically bet. I know you guys have similar type features to social feeds as well. But to me, that's a huge opportunity for the consumer to actually know it's verified data and it's not just manually entered or, you know, talked about, that type of thing. And it adds more credibility to the collective industry. So all of that, you know, kind of encompasses it. I think because of that, I would say you're allowed to bet with others in the community. However, at the same time, we have tons of other features. We monetize through premium features. So you pay $19.99 a month and you get additional items across the board there. So we have a lot of non-operator features and a lot of operator features, but we've really focused on what provides the best user experience to the consumer and how do we continue to double down on that to grow and scale.
I think I'm more confused now than before you answered that question. So let's leave the consumer out of this. What is the model that, like, do you have betting licenses? Like, do you hold client funds? Like, let's get to basics.
Yeah, definitely. So we came from the fintech space and we worked with Sport Radar and then we got in, you know, lawyers, that type of thing. So we're a non-regulated platform, and ultimately it is legal for you to bet against a friend. And we're ultimately connecting, you know, different users on our platform to be able to connect. I think one of my favorite stories is we launched marketing here in Minneapolis, and I had called legislation and said, hey, I love what you're doing to progress sports betting and be able to make an impact here. And they said, you know, Better Edge, I haven't heard of you. And I'm like, that's all right. We just launched marketing. And they ultimately came right back and, you know, I said, what is it? And I said, we're a peer-to-peer platform connecting users for sports gaming. And they're like, so you're legal. And I was like, I just spent, you know, 9 to 12 months getting legal opinions on what that looks like. However, it took me a 30-second phone call for you to validate and understand that particular space. And so, you know, we've launched, we're available in 45 states across the U.S., really based around connecting users for sports gaming.
So you're saying that if two people in the United States want to bet against each other, and they may or may not cross state lines, they can do that absolutely legally.
Yeah. And obviously there's different lawyers and expertise that have been able to dive into that, and also case law that supports it as well.
So what is the difference between user A and user B betting with each other and user A and company B betting with each other?
I think you just stated it. I mean, from a company standpoint, the company sets the price. The company, you know, has financial gain at consumer loss, whereas we're really a marketplace. You know, you look at what Uber did in the taxi industry, and Uber said, hey, we're a technology company. We're connecting riders and drivers. We're not a taxi company. You know, we don't need medallions. You know, and obviously went at it from that approach. I would say we're tackling it in a similar approach to Uber, to saying, hey, user A and user B, you guys wish to bet, feel free to go ahead and bet and leverage that accordingly.
So you're suggesting if I launched markets in the United States and we weren't involved whatsoever, but we handled the deposits and created the software for people to match against each other, that we could be live and legal in 45 states?
I would say it depends on the strategy at which you guys want to have. With working with, you know, lawyers, gambling control boards, different professionals in the space, that's been the guidance that's been given to us and ultimately said, allowing for two users to bet is obviously something that is able to do. And you see a lot of other companies from DraftKings, you know, DraftKings Prize Picks that are starting to double down really in the peer-to-peer space, whether it's Prize Picks Arena or, you know, Pick Six. They're obviously focused in that peer-to-peer space as well.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm sure you did your due diligence and you talked to the right people, but that just sounds, from where I'm sitting, that sounds like a crazy proposition that you can kind of skip all the legalization, you can skip all the licensing, you can skip all this sort of stupid fucking casino, whatever they're called, market access deals, you know, the legal extortion deals, and just be live in 45 states and not have to deal with any of that regulation. Sounds too good to be true, really.
I think that's fair. I mean, I think with the benefits there come drawbacks. I mean, obviously, what's the confidence level that you see, you know, from avid bettors? You know, you see a lot of different, you know, startups that, you know, struggle with that. And I think where we look to do is we want to provide right to the consumer. And so we've, you know, involved a lot of different charities, a lot of different components, and we've kept our burn really low. So we believe in doing the right thing and building a better community. It's kind of crazy because I came from the fintech space, or kind of the startup space, and how many platforms do you use? You know, I use Venmo all the time. It's obviously a money transmitter, but you don't have the additional scrutiny needed around Venmo to be kind of that tier of kind of what a regulated sports book might be. And ultimately, you know, you look back some years and, you know, Super Bowl Sunday, 44% of transactions on Venmo were related to sports gaming. So you have confidence in Venmo. So obviously, you know, there's other technology companies out there that can put the right controls, the right things in place to become verified. And that's really kind of what we're looking to do.
Well, I don't doubt that the consumers want this and that there's a need for it. I doubt the efficacy of the legislation in the various states and the way that they've set it up and the entrenched interests of the land-based casinos. That's sort of, and, you know, also the long arm of the CFTC and all those kinds of things. So it's more that side. I mean, I totally agree with you that people want to bet and they want to use Venmo to bet and make it easy to bet and all those kinds of things. But I don't agree that the United States is doing this in the best interest of consumers, or the states are doing it in the best interest of the consumers. And anyway, very curious. Okay. Just to be clear, you don't have any betting, any operator licenses anywhere.
Yeah, correct.
So if I sign up to your service and I want to bet against Jim Bob from Cedar Falls, do I send the money to him directly? And like, what do I use Better Edge for? Like, do you guys manage the negotiation of the bet and come up with some sort of like agreement when I trade against Jim Bob, or what happens?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways to ultimately leverage our platform. The one you just mentioned is head-to-head. And so you'd come on and think of it like Venmo. You know, you connect your bank account and then we confirm that those funds are available. So if you wish to be able to set agreement or terms with Jim Bob in that example, you can go ahead and set those terms, and that money is held in escrow. allowing for that to be able to set aside and then obviously get paid out based on the results that occur with it.
Yeah, just to understand the mechanics. So me and the counterparty, like you're connected to my bank account, I guess through ACH or whatever, right?
Yep.
So are you, like, I bet on Northwestern before they play UConn, you're taking that money out of my account, putting it in escrow, and then, you know, just sort of like a normal betting exchange.
Think of it like Venmo, where you actually have a wallet on Venmo. You also have a Better Edge wallet that holds those funds available, and you know that those are able for you to use when you, before you make that bet. And if not, then you'd have to transfer more money into that account.
And what are you doing to determine who wins the bet? Are you getting BetRadar's feeds, I guess, and then settling the bet yourselves?
Yeah. So we have SportRadar data that tells you, you know, what's happening. And then we build analytics. And where we're focusing on is how do we give you a better experience off that analytics and information on how you're betting in your history so that you can make more bets and win more in the future.
And are you guys counterparty to any bets yourselves?
Nope. Obviously, that's a huge part of the legal opinion and understanding. If you take a look at fantasy, for example, you know, fantasy's legal in 50 states as a, you know, core fantasy product. DFS is obviously, it unpacks a whole different kind of, you know, understanding from a DFS standpoint. But, you know, I see our platform as very social betting, very close to fantasy, but not, and obviously kind of very close to sports betting, but obviously not as well, since we're just connecting users. And you have kind of those groups and different kind of camaraderie that happens. So a lot of the, you know, legal opinion approach and how we apply it takes both those into account. I think fantasy is a really kind of interesting thing to look at as you dive into and understand the laws.
Okay. So your initial explanation makes a little bit more sense now. So you were saying like one of your models was a subscription model. What does the subscription get me? Do you have a freemium model? Like, can I bet against anybody without paying, or how do you guys do the mechanics?
Yeah. So think of Revolut is probably one of the best examples, if you're familiar with Revolut, as a, you know, freemium-based model. You have some things in there, but obviously Revolut is an exchange based around foreign currencies, and they have different things from banking, things like that as well, which don't necessarily make sense to us as a betting company. So we really more so focus on the analytics and, you know, how do you see more information about what's happening from a market standpoint and what's traded, where the price movement's going. All of those types of things, as well as just making it more seamless for you to be able to get your money in and out of your BetterEdge wallet. That all is encapsulated into a BetterEdge premium, and you can pay for that additionally. And that's really kind of one of the big monetization elements that we look to continue to build upon.
So I'm a huge fan of Revolut, but I don't necessarily get the parallel. You're saying that the premium benefits that you get with the metal card, for example, you have that version of like, if I pay $10 a month, $20 a month, you give me more features. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I actually moved to London in 2015 and became a huge Revolut, you know, TransferWise fan. And I think the parallels of their business align closely into saying, hey, let's create a better experience, a better product, a better way for people to be able to trade currencies while you're traveling. And, you know, those synergies align very closely to what it is that we're looking to do. I think in addition to that, you don't see a lot of sports gaming companies looking to have a premium or freemium type offering that allow for you to have more luxuries while you're out there kind of sports gaming on our platform. And so I think that's really where the parallel is. I will fully admit that, you know, Revolut has travel insurance. Starting to offer travel insurance and, you know, debit cards and things like that are not something that, you know, makes sense from a sports gaming standpoint, but ultimately, there's tons of opportunities and ways to monetize through those areas and different business, you know, opportunities that we have in mind. But ultimately, it really comes with growth and the consumer understanding of our platform. And they're on the table, but obviously not something that we're focused on initially.
So what are some of the example upsells that you guys have for your customers?
Yeah, so we have, you know, understanding your price is obviously one that's extremely valuable, or seeing external prices. So similar to Progressive in the insurance industry or even SmartGets, you know, being able to see what the price is on BetterEdge versus the price at other offerings is an extremely valuable endeavor as you're being able to trade in and out on the platform. So that's one that, you know, our users like a lot of. We also have additional referral-based things. So we do a lot of our user acquisition through word of mouth or through referrals. And so by being a premium user, you actually get value out of that and you're able to have a higher, you know, premium referral that standpoint. So those are two of our bigger ones. Obviously, we're looking to continue to add and innovate across those as well. But analytics to say, how am I doing on betting basketball versus betting football? You know, those type of analytics help you become smarter. So when you look at other technology platforms in the space that have premium offerings, you know, those are all things that we can look to, you know, either partner and collaborate on or ultimately be able to build kind of into our premium offering.
Got it. And do you take customers outside of the US or are you US only right now?
We're US only. You know, we probably get, I'd say, a question a week on whether we're available in Europe. And, you know, in reality, I think the opportunity in the US is too big to be able to kind of lose focus on that. But I definitely should be getting your number and sending them over your guys' way by any means to
sell
you guys out, because huge fan of what you guys do as well and the impact you guys have made in the space.
Thanks very much. And happy to talk about SmartKeys in a bit. So if you're operating as a betting exchange, one that you don't participate in, how do you manage liquidity? Like, how do you make sure that there's enough? Because that's one of the big things I've noticed being on my side of the fence is that people most often don't want to wait for their bet to get matched. They'd rather pay the spread and get matched now. How do you guys manage that situation? Do you have market makers? Can you have market makers?
Yeah, so it's a question that I think we lost a lot of sleep over when we launched, you know, dating back to 2019, 2020. Everyone kind of asked what that's going to look like. And I think our focus has always been on, let's get individuals who wish to bet and let's get kind of those retail bettors in there. And having enough traffic and having enough interest in the platform has really brought in people that understand price conscious behaviors and saying, if you can get a bet at plus 105, that's extremely valuable. And so once you educate the consumer and educate users on that, it's really just kind of float through. And where there's good price things, people take advantage of that. And so we don't actually have any, you know, institutional market makers on there. And we see from a retention standpoint, I think it's probably one of the biggest metrics to leverage on whether users like that. But we see about an 80%, 75 to 80% retention after 30 days for users that have placed an order. So proud of that. I think there's, you know, some switching costs that, you know, get baked into that. But ultimately, it shows that users like it and they understand it. And those that don't, obviously, it's either an education point on what we're, why we're different or how we're not used to similar to your typical type sports betting space. And then obviously once they get it, they say, oh, light bulb went off. I get it now. And then they jump back in. Or obviously maybe that's not for them and they jump right off and maybe they'll come back in the future or not.
Are you able to work with market makers with your legal structure or no?
I think from that standpoint, I mean, it's a huge gray area in what that looks like. But ultimately, you look at gray areas, you know, DFS 2.0 is obviously a gray area across, you know, the US as well and all of that. But we really are just focusing on how do we provide the best experience to our users? And all of that's really built around that. And
if the rest if only life were that simple, Greg, if only life were that simple. So in terms of like fixed costs, marginal costs for operators in the US, like there's a lot of there's compliance costs, payment fee costs, data costs, blah, blah, blah. And if you have a freemium model, how are you managing the sort of those costs that you're not monetizing because you're not a counterparty to the transaction?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've had a chance to check out some of your podcasts, and I think there's a lot of similarities in SmartKeys and Better Edge and how we've both taken a business approach to being very scrappy and trying to, you know, punch above our weight to obtain users. First, we don't pay ridiculous acquisition costs for our users. You know, we leverage our community and leverage, you know, the social nature of it and really get the flywheel going. Coming off March Madness, we've done a lot of free-to-play type things from bracket fill-outs with brands or with companies. You know, those brought in, you know, over 1,500 users at a relatively low acquisition of people who are sports fans engaged around March Madness. And then obviously that becomes top of funnel for us. So that's one way that we continue to stay scrappy. And I think a lot of that's, you know, our CTO and James is a mastermind behind what he can do technology-wise and extremely thankful and appreciative of that to help us, you know, go to market and continue that path.
As you were setting up, did you study SmartKeys and what we were good at and bad at? Is there any sort of, do you want to throw some rocks at the way I've set things up or maybe I've gotten too many licenses and really fucked up there? But like, what were your thoughts about what I did with SmartKeys?
No, I've always known about you guys for the longest time, and I've dug in to a lot of your kind of history and things more in the last, you know, 48 hours than ever. But it's crazy, you know, running a startup, you have tons of different external and internal forces that you have to overcome. So I can't, you know, necessarily critique what I don't know for given where you were at in the path. And then obviously how things came out to that. You've openly talked about your guys' US approach and introduction to Indiana and Colorado, which I think is interesting just because there's so much competition in the US. And obviously I think SmartKeys is a extremely differentiated product than, you know, offerings in those states and available. That it's interesting that you guys came with SBK, but also that's a huge moneymaker for you guys as well. So I completely get why. And you ultimately don't realize how competitive it is until you're in the space and really kind of ultimately understanding it. So always interesting, but ultimately I think you guys have a really solid product, a solid future, and some of the marketing things you guys have done have been pretty, you know, witty and funny as well. So kudos to you guys.
Sometimes we fuck it up, but thank you. Thank you for that. So, you know, on this podcast, we've interviewed a lot of sort of, I don't know what you would call them, but sort of like betting adjacent startups. So like the Odds Jams and, you know, you have Action Networks and the Pickets and Picket, you know, all these sort of companies that unabated, you know, they're trying to be this sort of tool set. And it sounds like you're trying to like have a foot in each camp between the operator camp and the sort of betting tool camp. And it feels like a very, very crowded space. How are you trying to get your name out there? You know, like the outliers, for example, like how are you trying to get your name out there? Because it feels very crowded with startups.
Yeah, I think looking at the crowded nature, it's tough. I mean, it probably took me, you know, longer than any of the two to help you wrap your head around what our platform was on this podcast. But given that, it's, I think what ends up happening is once you continue to provide that, you know, better experience, not have the silos all over the place, there's a lot of opportunity there. And granted, you know, Pickett's going to be a better bet tracker than we are every single day of the year. And whether that's Pickett or Juice Reel or anything else, it's going to take a lot of work and focus to be able to compete in that type of space. But ultimately, you have a more efficient user experience because you might be able to get picks within platform. You might be able to take action on that. So if I'm following Jason in Better Edge, I can actually copy or fade you ultimately right there. And it takes you directly into our marketplace. And you can place that based on given open orders and things like that. So I believe much more in making things more efficient. And if we can do that for our users, then obviously there's a lot of opportunity there. And that, you know, not only stops at influencers, but it goes deeper into media. So you look at all the media personalities, they have opinions, they have content, they have information that we're not privy to. How do we serve that up in social feeds to make it more easy to digest, be able to take action on?
And you said earlier you launched in 2021. How many employees do you guys have? How much money have you guys raised?
Yeah, so we've raised about $1.5 million. So been pretty scrappy over that time. Brought on Jason Zucker from NHL. And obviously that was a huge addition for us from a validation from the NHL standpoint. They do a lot of kind of digging into the back of it. But then ultimately, he's a huge philanthropist in the space as well. So we actually, one of the pieces that we have is education. So how do we educate our users that they're saving more money by using Better Edge? So every time you bet $20, it'll say, congrats, you've saved, you know, a dollar on this particular transaction. Do you wish to donate that back to charity? And then we've partnered with Chad Greenway's Lead the Way Foundation, Folds of Honor, Give 16 to say, hey, let's donate that money and provide it to a good cause, which I think is a really cool endeavor. And ultimately really just kind of given us different ways to kind of promote that and push it. So that's a nice add to it. And then from our full-time basis, we have 3 full headcount. And then we've obviously brought in marketing support from agencies as well as UX support as well from the UK. So complemented that nicely, but ultimately focus on really just providing that user experience and ultimately keeping our cash burn low as well.
Awesome. And are you guys remote or do you have an office?
We have an office in Minneapolis, kind of a WeWork type space. It's called North House and it's got a nice, you know, viewing area. So we just did a watch party on Friday for March Madness and golf simulators and all that. So it was ultimately just a blast to be able to host a lot of the different, you know, companies and individuals in our space and watch some basketball.
That's sacrilege to move to Minnesota if you're from Iowa, isn't it? Isn't that sort of the enemy country?
There's a lot of rivalry there, but yeah, no, it's, I moved up here for PwC and just job opportunity and being close to an airport is pretty nice as well. A little bit more convenient than the Des Moines or Cedar Rapids airport.
Yeah, well, I know both those airports pretty well, actually. So I can sympathize with the Minneapolis airport being a lot nicer. Awesome. Before I let you go, what do you want to be when you grow up?
I think I like where we're at. You know, if I could, my dream kind of role is, you know, efficiency. So how do you make efficiency happen in different sectors? And I love kind of what we're doing at the charitable piece, a Better Edge. And obviously there's a much more efficiency happening when you're not taking a, you know, 10% big. So pretty passionate about just kind of efficiency and doing well for others. So excited that I'm able to weave both of those into Better Edge. But ultimately, after wherever this goes, I think something along those lines and charitable and giving back, I think is something I'd find myself doing. How about yourself?
Maybe a politician, maybe another entrepreneur, maybe, I don't know, a good grandpa. I'd like to be a good grandpa at some point. My father-in-law visited this weekend and he was just so active with my kids. And I was like, man, if I have half his energy at his age, I'll be in good shape. So it's nice to see old people who have vigor, and I would like to have vigor when I'm older.
great grandparents are a blessing and they're awesome to watch. Anything? Did you guys do anything fun in London while he was there?
We visited Oxford and we went to Covent Garden.
Very cool. Very awesome places. Yeah. And yeah, I like it.
Awesome. Well, thanks for stopping by. Thanks for sharing your journey. Good luck with your strategy. I'll be watching from the sidelines to see how it goes because it sounds interesting. I hope it all goes well for you.
Awesome, man. Appreciate the support and appreciate you having us on.
All right. Cheers, Greg.
Thanks.
The Business of Betting podcast is presented by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming industry. 4 out of the top 5 U.S. operators personalize player experiences with Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming industry. Learn more about Optimove by requesting a demo at optimove.com/businessofbetting. And if you like what you see, you will get your first month free.